When you need medical help fast, use NHS 111 online to go from home to an urgent treatment centre.
Mr. Williams, please come through.
Or a pharmacy.
Hello, pharmacist will see you now.
Or if needed, stay where you are and get a call from a nurse, doctor, or paramedic. Get assessed and directed to the right place for you in as little as 90 seconds. Use NHS 111 online.
This is the North East and North Cumbria Providers Podcast, highlighting the fantastic work taking place across the region to provide the highest quality of care.
Hi, and welcome to the latest episode of the Providers Podcast. I'm your host, Harry Newhouse, Communications Officer for the North East and North Cumbria Provider Collaborative. Today, we're diving into the Medicines of RU programme, a pioneering initiative launched in March 2025 to tackle the rising costs of medicines in secondary care and ensure sustainable, equitable access for patients. Joining me are two key voices behind this work, Katie Joyce, the Medicines of RU programme lead, and Laura Tweddle, who is a Senior Clinical Pharmacy Manager at South Tees Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust. Together, we'll explore how the programme is transforming medicines use, improving outcomes, and fostering a culture of shared learning and innovation. Welcome, Katie and Laura. How are you both?
Thank you. Very, very good.
Yeah, I'm very well. Thanks for having me today.
Katie, please, could you introduce yourself and give us a brief overview of your career so far within the NHS?
Yes, so as you mentioned, my name's Katie Joyce. I'm the Medicines Value Programme Lead for North East North Cumbria Provider Collaborative. So I have been in the NHS for over 10 years now, mainly as a hospital clinical pharmacist and a prescriber. I've worked for trusts within the North East and also in London, covering roles in medical specialties, integrated care, and a bit of time in electronic patient records as well. But the key themes that I've had sort of throughout those roles is managing and leading on change initiatives and engaging with a diverse range of stakeholders and really advocating for how we can work more effectively together. So just a couple examples of that. So I was part of the digital transformation team at Imperial College Healthcare Trust that onboarded Chelsea and Westminster onto a shared electronic patient record. And then also in my most recent role at County Durham and Darlington Trust, the team and I won an award recently in Copenhagen at the start of this year, and that was on our collaborative work in our approach to implementing shared cares agreements in cardiology. So I guess why this role had really appealed to me is because that's what it's all about. It's about bringing stakeholders together from different organisations. It's about involvement. It's about making change for the better that crosses organisational boundaries. And it's got the added bonus of data and finance, which I just really enjoy.
Perfect. And same question to you, Laura.
Yeah, so I'm Laura Tweddle, and I'm a hospital pharmacist by trade, and I've had a career predominantly based in the Tees Valley. Over the last 8 years, I've been working in pharmacy management and leadership roles at South Tees Hospitals and get involved in all kinds of different things and done lots of work on workforce, staffing and education. But more recently, getting involved in drug finances and medicines optimisation. So I'm quite new to the game, and I've been delighted to be working with Katie on the Regional Medicines Value Programme.
So we're here today to talk about the Medicines Value Programme. What is it and why has it started?
So as I'm sure everyone is really aware, the NHS is under significant financial pressure at the moment, and the spend on medicines is the second largest NHS expenditure, second only to workforce. So just in our region alone, in North East North Cumbria, the secondary care spend on medicines last year was £665 million. And that is a figure that has rose by on average 10% every year for the last 5 years. This rise in every year is due to increases in demand, but also because we have new innovative treatments coming to market that are complex and expensive. And that's a really great thing because it means there's more treatments available to patients, there's more treatments that perhaps have better efficacy, fewer adverse effects, maybe better tolerated, treatments for conditions that previously had no treatment at all. But what we also need to remember is that we're working with a finite amount of resources, and so we need to balance how we use those resources that we can make these innovative medicines as accessible to everyone who needs them. So that's why in March this year, the North East North Cumbria Provider Collaborative, with support from the Integrated Care Board, launched the Medicines Value Programme. And what the Medicines Value Programme does is look to take a strategic approach to identifying and implementing Medicines Value initiatives that will ensure sustainability, efficiency and equity across the region. And doing that by fostering collaboration between providers and commissioners, breaking down those siloed ways of working and creating shared solutions to challenges that we face in medicines use.
And I presume that all the NHS trusts, foundation trusts in the region have agreed to this programme. How did you get them all to work together to help do this, and was that hard to do?
It definitely can be hard. I guess the biggest thing is creating that engagement. And one of the first steps we did in the programme was set up the Medicines Value Group. And what that group does is bring together multidisciplinary experts and influential stakeholders from the acute providers, from commissioners, from support services, the regional procurement leads, NHS England. And membership of this group is entirely voluntary, so that's already a really good step in that everyone in the room wants to be there, so there's already that enthusiasm to be involved. And what they can then do is act as champions to take back that regional approach back to their trusts, and to act as champions there and to turn that into action where it really matters. And Laura, who was with us here, is a great example of one of those champions doing that. I think what's crucial is that there's a shared ownership created of the group and shared ownership of the solutions. And that means that we will also hold each other to account, making sure everyone does those actions that we have agreed to. And central to any effective strategy is having a motivating purpose. So our mission is not just about financial efficiencies, which I think is really important, because that is kind of the go-to when we talk about Medicines Value. We talk about how much money has been saved by doing this initiative. But to me, that's not really the important part. It's then, what do we do with that saving? What are we doing besides just looking at the saving? Are we looking at quality? Are we reducing inequities? Are we improving access to care and treatments? So that's where I really think we can get people on board with the message of why we're doing what we're doing. And I think supporting that is the feedback that we had from our quarter one survey, where 100% of the respondents had agreed that there is a clear mission, that there's an ethos of collaboration, and that all the members of the group are aligned to a common goal. So while there's definitely still challenges, there's definitely pockets of resistance, I think having that clear message and getting people to understand why we're doing what we're doing is what will keep people engaged.
How has the programme changed the way pharmacy teams work in hospitals such as yours, South Tees?
So I think the Medicines Value programme, like I say, I'm quite new to the party, but it opened my eyes to the huge opportunities that are possible across the system. And I've kind of tried to adapt the model of the Medicines Value Group regionally to locally at South Tees. So this initiated just firstly me getting together with a group of key pharmacists to reiterate information that I was receiving through the regional group. But it's now expanded to include key clinicians, service managers and the medical director. So I feel now able to influence a wider pool of people in my own organisation as to the importance of this work and the key mission that Katie and her team have. So through information fed through the regional group, we've been able to adapt a local policy, which helps us in being efficient with our medicines optimisation, identifying areas for improvement and actually implementing that change to create efficiency and cost improvements. And I think what it's also done is changed an overall organisation culture around medicines, cost, the cost of drugs, and why drug cost optimisation is so crucial to the running of an NHS organisation.
So you use tools like the Medicines Efficiency Tracker. How do these help make better choices about medicines?
So the Medicines Efficiency Tracker is something that was newly created at the start of the programme. There was something already similar existing in the primary care space, but there was nothing already like that in secondary care. And the main purpose of it was to develop insights into secondary care medicines expenditure. So what it does is track on a monthly basis what the overall secondary care expenditure is on medicines in the region, but then also break that down at provider level, and then also break that down further into Medicines Value initiatives that we've agreed upon, so that we can then also track that and look at our progress as the year goes on. So using that data, it means we can identify where there's variation, we can identify the outliers to really target interventions, and it also allows us to do some forecasting for the end of the year and forecasting what our efficiencies are going to be. And using a bit of that predictive analysis, we can then respond quickly when things are going off course, which we have seen. You know, we've seen from one month to the next, there's maybe been some data that was unexpected, but then we take that and look closely at it to figure out what is influencing that change in spend and what can we do about it. Is it just one trust experience in it? Is it everyone? And really target those interventions and be prepared for the whole financial year.
Have you made any big changes, like switching to different medicines? how has that gone?
One of the biggest changes that we first made was having a shared cost improvement plan across the 8 acute providers. So previously, each trust would have a medicines cost improvement plan that they would be working on, but that was never shared with the other trusts. Now we have a shared space within our files where everyone can upload their cost improvement plan, and then all of the trusts are encouraged to look at each other's plan and to steal ideas, copy and paste, because the whole point is about sharing the knowledge that we have, sharing what is already being done, what good practice we can share. And kind of going back to what Laura said, what we want to avoid is 8 acute trusts going off and doing something 8 times that could have been done once. So we've already got an example of where a medication from a cost improvement plan at Newcastle has been taken, shared with the other trusts, and then further shared into primary care. And it means that piece of work was only done once at Newcastle and really helped to preserve that resource at the other trusts. So it's just making it more efficient in terms of the resources as well. The other big area that we're looking at changing is how we implement biosimilar and generic medicine switches. So a biosimilar is a medicine that becomes available once an originator biologic molecule, so very complex molecules made from biological material, once they lose their patent exclusivity, other manufacturers and suppliers can get a marketing authorization for that product and make it a much cheaper version of it. But what it is the same in terms of efficacy, clinical efficacy, safety, quality, immunogenicity, and so the MHRA says that they're interchangeable, and NHS England now has a commissioning framework that encourages us to use the best value molecule as soon as they become available. So what we've done is look at our approach to past biosimilar switches, where we've moved from an originator to a biosimilar. So we did a piece of work looking at ustekinumab switch that happened last year. We did a post-implementation review of that, and actually what we found was that there was a lot of variation in the uptake of the biosimilar in terms of how quickly we were able to uptake the biosimilar across the 8 acute providers. And we were really able to, through a kind of case study process, get down to the detail of why there was those variations. And what we found was that the challenges and hurdles that each trust had was different. So hopefully, now that we've got those lessons learned, going forward, we're more prepared for encountering those issues again with our switches upcoming. But the ustekinumab is an example of where just one switch of that drug is £10 million per year in savings across just our region, let alone whatever that was nationally. And so from those lessons learned and identifying best practice, we've then gone on to develop a policy template for using best value medicines that will be adapted and used locally by each trust. And then we're also developing checklists for each of the big biologic and generic switches that we have upcoming, to really put those lessons learned into practice and get everyone working in a consistent way.
How does that affect self-tease?
Some examples of the shared innovation that Katie mentioned about sharing ideas. One example I can give is that colleagues at Newcastle shared with us at South Tees their plans to change a group of neurology patients from an intravenous injection that had to be administered in hospital to a new subcutaneous injection that could be administered in a patient's home. So not only is that benefit to the patient who no longer needs to come for regular hospital appointments, but the alternative product was also cheaper, so a cost saving as well. And it just wasn't something that we had considered prior to that shared learning. So, you know, they're the sorts of examples of where if we work together and collaborate as a region, there's so much potential for further optimisation. The programmes also highlighted other things that were completely off our radar. Like, we weren't particularly looking at glucose testing strips, which is not a drug per se, but kind of was brought up in the programme and something that we've reviewed that could save us in the region of 100,000 to 150,000 at South Tees alone by making some changes there as well. So, yeah, lots of positives.
So what's the target over the next 12 months and what's the update since the programme started?
So from the start of the financial year, we set a target based on some assumptions that we know about biosimilars and generics, and then some of the cost improvement ideas that were put forward. And from those figures, we estimated a £10 million efficiency saving on medicines across the eight acute providers. And we are currently on track to over-deliver on that. Obviously, a lot can happen between now and the end of the year, so I'm very cautious about saying that. But at the moment, we are also, based on the data that we have up until the end of August, our spend across the eight acute providers on secondary care drugs is lower than what we would expect it to be based on last year's spend. And that is not including any growth increase that we would normally see. We are actually below that spend. So that just really highlights how much work is going on in all of the trusts to deliver cost efficiencies.
Do you think this work that's been shown in hospitals can also help GPs and community pharmacies too?
I'd like to think so. So I'm very much in agreement that we should be taking a systems approach and systems thinking in everything that we do in the NHS. We are all one big massive team, we are all one NHS. So I do try work closely across that primary secondary care interface. I work very closely with the ICB Medicines Optimisation team, who are focusing on a lot of the medication efficiencies in primary care to really connect the dots, because there is a lot of overlap. So I go along to their meetings and we try to work together on some of the drugs that will be crossing over that interface to really align the medicines value initiatives across both. So I think it will benefit. I think the benefits are probably less obvious. I think there'll be, it's less of a focus. It's more like the approach means that they are always being considered and involved where they need to be involved. And we're not doing something in the hospital that will have a negative outcome for primary care. If there is a drug that we're looking at in secondary care, we will be considering, maybe we can get it cheaper on a framework in secondary care, but what does that mean in primary care? If it's going to be long-term in primary care, we need to think about the spend there as well. So it's thinking about what is the other impacts on the system with whatever we're trying to do. And so that's where I think they will see the benefit from what we're doing.
And it's vice versa as well, isn't it, that the impact on, if primary care make changes, there's impact on secondary care there as well. So like Katie said, it's so important that we are united in what we're doing and, you know, effectively communicating and working together as a team across the region.
So you mentioned how obviously saving money for the NHS is one of the biggest benefits to this programme, but how does it make things better for patients? Because we mentioned that we need to keep the quality at the same level or better. So how does it improve care for patients, this programme?
Yeah, so quality absolutely must not be sacrificed in any pursuit for efficiency. And so there's a few things that we've done to ensure that patients are involved and to ensure that we are not just focusing on costs. So one thing is looking at what does value actually mean. So there's a bit of an absence of definition of what medicine's value is, and that's something that I will be looking at more closely and to develop in the future. But as it stands, we know that medicine's value means it's not just the drug acquisition costs. It's also things like how many appointments does that mean the patient's going to have? Does the device change? How is it administered? What does that mean for the patient? Is it tolerable? Is it switching something that's a tablet to an injection? Is that appropriate? Is that acceptable for patients? Going back to what Laura said, a drug that would have to be given in a hospital where there is the transport. So thinking about sustainability as well, the transport into the hospital for every single appointment, spending time on the day unit, the nursing time that goes into caring on a day unit appointment. If we can swap something to something that is taken closer to home, that is value itself. So it's balancing all of those things that are value with the cost. So something might be more, a little bit more expensive, but if actually it's going to be better for the patients to then have it home and release nursing time because it can be administered out in the community, maybe self-administered by the patient, that might tap the balance, and that becomes the more valuable option. So it's really important that when we're looking at value, we're thinking about those other things. And I don't want to in any way assume what the patient experience is. So one of the things that we've done is we were awarded a research grant recently to do some patient involvement work and do some focus groups with patients that have experienced a biosimilar switch in the last 24 months. And what that will do is address what was a good experience, what was a negative experience, ask about what was communicated to them during that switch, what their concerns were, to really get a deep understanding and narrative of what that experience is like for patients, to then put some of that learning into practice and apply some of that thinking when we are doing our switch checklists, implementing the policy, doing our communication documents. So hopefully those, from doing that work as well, the program is going to make the patient experience better in the future.
Have you seen these benefits as LTs?
Yeah, absolutely. I think to reiterate what Katie said, that it's about medicine's value, and it doesn't just mean saving money, but ultimately any efficiency in the NHS absolutely does make things better for patients. And I, you know, it's not a secret that the NHS has financial difficulties, and so it is crucial that we make sure that we spend everything we spend appropriately and effectively for our patients. By doing so, that will allow us the involvement of expansion of healthcare services and treatments that could be offered within the NHS, which of course we want to see continue to grow. Optimisation of high-cost drugs can lead to really significant NHS savings. Some of the drugs Katie's talking about, we're not talking in the hundreds and thousands of pounds, we're talking in the millions. And that's why it's so important that we work together to identify and implement efficiencies to improve overall patient care at South Tees, but across the region as well.
And finally, what are the next steps for the programme, and from a Trust perspective, where would you like to see the programme take shape?
So we just want to continue to collaborate and work with the region to continue to deliver the medicines optimisation. I'd like to think we've given something to that at South Tees, but we've also received an awful lot from the programme, and I think that's the really unique thing that we have going across the region that we're really delighted to continue to be part of. I am particularly interested to see how things evolve in relation to the research that Katie mentioned, in terms of continuing to work with the public around perceptions of drug switching and biologic medicines. I'm keen to see how that evolves in time.
As programme lead, Katie, where would you like to see the programme in the next stages?
Our next stages for just now are some of the things that we've really set up for in the first 6 months. So that is preparing for our efficiencies that we're going to see in the second part of the year. We've done a lot of figuring out what best practice is, a lot of figuring out lessons learned. So it's going to be to continue to be prepared for those switches and actually put that into practice and do some more post-implementation reviews. But I also want to keep exploring how we can work better with industry, how we can partner with industry. The research that we're doing is in partnership with Newcastle University as well, so looking for all of those opportunities to collaborate across organisations to share expertise. Some of the next steps in the programme, I talked about looking at what medicine's value means, what are the principles of medicine's value, and kind of developing those so that it can be used in day-to-day decision making. Also looking at how we can link our medicine spend data to other types of data, other outcomes data, to really get some insight into what works best and really do some work on, I guess, smart commissioning and smart prescribing that leads to better outcomes. And definitely what Laura mentioned there about looking at where the money is reinvested. So if there's this cost saving, is it just taken off the bottom line? Or actually, where do we have the examples of it being reinvested into patient care or better access to drugs or whatever it is? So one of the pieces of work I'll be looking at doing it next with Newcastle is getting some case studies of where they have done that. They've made X million saving on whatever switch, where did that money go and how did it improve quality of care for patients or improve access to treatments for patients? So, and I think that'll be the real key to some of those pockets of resistance talked about earlier, is demonstrating that it doesn't just vanish into the abyss, which it sometimes, I think, does, but actually demonstrating that we are monitoring where that money goes and it is going back into patients.
Brilliant. I think that's a brilliant note to end on. So thank you very much for both joining me today.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Providers Podcast. Hit subscribe to keep up to date with the latest news and catch up with what we've been up to on our website and social media pages.